Hello and welcome to Radio EduTalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay in Scotland, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show Amy Klinger, who is Director of Programmes at the Educators School Safety Network. Welcome to EduTalk, Amy.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you on the show. And just to start off with, could you give us a kind of brief background to your career?
Yeah, I am the Director of Programs for the Educator School Safety Network, and we are a national nonprofit. We work throughout the United States and Canada, as well as a bit internationally. And we're a little bit different from most safety organizations in that we come primarily from an educational perspective. My background is 28 years in public education, primarily as an administrator, but also as a teacher. And so we really come to the work of school safety from a prevention standpoint, but also from an education view, because we are not law enforcement folks. We are running schools, not prisons. So we really look at what can we do from an educational viewpoint to train and empower educators, because they really are the first responders. When something happens in a school, it is the educators in the building who will be the first responders.
And how did the network come about, and why do you feel that there's an ongoing need for this kind of resource?
Well, what started it was when my son joined the volunteer fire department here in our small town in Ohio. And he was 18 at the time, and I was a middle school principal. And in the 2 months that he was on the fire department, he had more training than I had had in 20 years in education in terms of emergency response and crisis management, that sort of thing. And that contrast between what he was being trained to do as a volunteer fireman and volunteer EMT was so stark between that level of training and the level of training that I did not have after, but still was in charge of hundreds of kids in a school building. And that really started me looking at what kind of training was available to educators, which there isn't a lot, and why weren't we receiving that kind of training? And that led me to do my dissertation work in the area of school safety and to really start to do a lot of research and development of resources and training and information that just wasn't available, that just wasn't there for people in schools. And as far as the need for it, we know that anytime you have hundreds of kids together in a school building, you're going to have medical emergencies, you're going to have access control problems, you're going to have fights, you're going to have severe weather, you're going to have a whole variety of different potential crisis events that we really weren't preparing people very adequately for to respond to those.
And so what kinds of crisis do you particularly work with schools and networks and educators on? And is it some problems that are specific to schools or learning institutions in particular states in the United States? Or is it more broad? Is it kind of common themes that we would see in schools across the world?
Well, that's a great question, because one of my frustrations at times here in the U.S. is that there's a very heavy emphasis on active shooter response for school shooters. And clearly, we have a long, bitter history that indicates that those sort of shooting events happen. The problem is when that's all that you focus on, because that's the thing that you fear the most, you are neglecting the things that are much more likely to happen, because it's very statistically unlikely that a school in the United States or Scotland or pick a place is going to have a violent attacker. But it is very likely that a school in any of those places is going to have a medical emergency, a severe weather event, a catastrophe or a disaster that happens in the area, or any one of, you know, a non-custodial parent, a fight, any one of a million different things. And if all we are preparing for is the active shooter event, then we are doing a disservice to the more likely events that we are going to have to respond to that can be just as catastrophic and just as dangerous to kids. And so that's really one of the things that we work very hard is to have a comprehensive all hazards approach to school safety, not just this one particular event.
And so you engage educators with research training and resources. So I just wonder, Amy, if you would like to pick out some of your some recent research or training that's proven particularly popular at the moment, just to give us a flavour of some of your work.
Well, actually, we have ongoing research that we do where we track threats and incidents in schools to see what are the trends and what's happening and, you know, what things are increasing. And we've seen this in Europe as well as in the United States, this pretty dramatic increase in the number of bomb threats. And also, proportionately, an increase in the number of detonations. And so what we see here in the United States is that people are not really adequately prepared to respond to bomb threats. So they end up with a lot of chaos and copycats and all kinds of things happening that perpetuate more of those threats. And so at the same moment, they're also not preparing for the possibility of a detonation. It's like only preparing for a fire drill and never preparing for a fire. And so that's one area that we've been doing a lot of research and a lot of training in. That seems to be a need that's international, not just here in the United States. The other is a more general sort of a philosophical approach that we have, which is trying to decentralize training and the capabilities. So if the only person in the building that is a decision maker that knows what to do is the principal, then you have put all your eggs in that basket. And so if the principal is unavailable or compromised or killed or injured, you have lots of people in a building that don't necessarily know what to do, who are waiting for someone to tell them what to do, regardless of the nature of the event. So one of the things that we are very active about is decentralizing that so that every person from the principal or the head, you know, the leader of the school, all the way to the smallest child, has some idea and has been empowered and trained to know what to do in these particular events, not just one event, but multiple sort of crisis events that might occur.
Now, we have many listeners around the world to Radio EduTalk, listen regularly to our shows. We also have many listeners in the United Kingdom. So, Amy, I'm just wondering what kind of resources or what kind of interaction is possible from maybe our UK-based listeners with the Educator School Safety Network. Obviously, I would imagine face-to-face kind of training might be difficult, but, you know, you obviously have a very well-resourced website.
Well, yeah, it's kind of a continuum. First of all, there's nothing I love better than to come to Europe. So training face to face is always an option because we really love the opportunity also from a research scholarly perspective to be able to, you know, we've done some work internationally and it's really very beneficial to us to also see what's happening in other countries and what their needs are. But we also have developed and are in the process of launching a pretty full stable of resources that people can access. Everything, you know, from online courses that are direct sort of, you know, virtual trainings all the way down to, you know, PDFs and self-assessment checklists and worksheets and things like that. Because as a nonprofit, our mission is to put things in the hands of the people that need them. And so we really are trying to continually broaden the scope of the resources that we have available that are either free or very low cost so that we can get them in the hands of the people that need them, regardless of where they're located geographically.
So as a first port of call then, Amy, would people just go to www.eschoolsafety.org?
Yeah. And we have a book that's coming out in the summer that's written from a bit more of an administrative or educational leader perspective. But we've really tried to sort of break down the work of school safety into manageable pieces because it can seem very overwhelming of all the different potential things that can happen and all the different planning mechanisms that need to be in place. So we really try to sort of break it down kind of thematically so that people can, you know, I always use the analogy of it's sort of like eating an elephant. You're going to do it a bite at a time. And anything you do is better than doing nothing. So we try to make it very manageable for people to be able to make gradual improvements and to really kind of work away at it and make it something that they do every day rather than we wait till an event happens and then everyone goes crazy and, you know, and tries to get all everything done and perfect. And then we kind of forget about it again. So we're trying to keep an awareness that is not we're constantly in a state of panic or in a state of fear, but rather like our emergency responders do. We're prepared. We know what to do. We are going about our daily business, but we know that we have been empowered and trained to be able to respond when something happens. And that's kind of the end game of where we're trying to get people to.
And how are you going about developing your research training and resources? And particularly, you kind of touched on it earlier, Amy, but what are the kind of trends in Europe and in the States in terms of maybe crises that are becoming more prevalent or new types of crises?
Well, we see one of the things that we've seen through our research is that, and again, this follows lots of other trends, so I'm sure it's not shocking to anyone, but what we're seeing is that the scope and the influence of other, you know, none of this is happening in a vacuum. So, you know, you have an individual, and this just happened last week, so I'll use this example. You have an individual who puts out a social media threat, and he's threatening MHS, which stands for, in this case, a certain, you know, a high school in Virginia, MHS. And then all of a sudden that explodes on the internet through social media. And, you know, by last count, we had upwards of 32 schools who thought that they were being threatened with violence because of this social media thing that went viral and was passed around and modified and so on. So that influence. And we've seen that with a lot of bomb threats in the UK and in Europe as well, where they're not coming from the kid next door. They're coming from actors far outside of the geographic boundaries of the school. So I think that's one of the trends we've really seen is that there is so much more of that interconnectedness where it's not just one individual in the school doing something, although that still is most often the case. But we're seeing more and more where schools are being influenced by things that are happening far beyond their borders.
Now, I'm interested that in Scotland and in England, you know, we have our regulators, we have our inspectorate, and you know, I just wonder how on the ball schools are with regards to this. Particularly, I'm interested when you talk about sort of devolving the leadership around, you know, first responders, etc. So, just looking for a perspective from yourself, Amy, in terms of you know how much of this is or how important is it in the agenda within the States for those who are inspecting or holding schools accountable?
Well, it's interesting in the United States and that, you know, there is so much local control, which is a really, you know, a very central component of public education in the United States is that there is a great amount of local control, whether it's at the town or the city level or through the state. And so you see an incredible amount of variance from state to state to state in terms of how much they require, how much they are inspecting, how much they are accountable, what the expectations are. And it varies incredibly from one state to the next. So there is not and that's one of the potential concerns is while there are best practices that come out and recommendations from the National Department of Education and FEMA and DHS, individual states interpret that or enforce it or require it to varying degrees. So when we work throughout the United States from one place to the next, we can find a great deal of variety in how much they're requiring, how much training they're expecting, and so on. And that's really one issue. The other issue is that as far as we can tell, we are the only nonprofit that is coming from an education perspective. Most of the training that's available, a lot of the training that's available to educators is coming from a law enforcement or a security perspective, which is not it's not an apples to apples comparison. A crisis event in a school is very different than a crisis event at a shopping mall or an office building or a hospital. And so that differentiation is really important to understand the unique circumstances and the concerns of schools in terms of their planning and their response.
And just reading through your website, Amy, and I noticed that you also say that one of your aims is to create safer schools for LGBT students. So that sounds quite different maybe from some of your other work. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, yeah, a lot of that is predicated on this sort of myth, I guess, that we have to do something very different for our LGBT students. And what we're really trying to get schools to understand, and a lot of this came out from some of the gender issues with bathrooms and all that kind of stuff that was sort of a hot topic for a while. And I guess what we're trying to get people to understand is that when you create safe, supportive spaces for all students, you have covered your LGBT community. You've covered, even though there are unique concerns there, that we're trying to perpetuate safe and supportive spaces for everyone. And one of the things that I think makes our organization a little bit different is that we put a lot of focus on prevention. You can get a lot of training in what to do after you call 911 or after you call for help. There is training available for that. What we're looking at, in addition to that training, is we're looking at what can we do to prevent these events from ever happening? What can we do to protect vulnerable populations? What can we do to detect or to pick up on students of concern and individuals of concern in a preventative mode? So we try to be, and again, that comes from being an educational perspective. An educational notion is very proactive. We try to be proactive in our instructional practices. Well, we try to be proactive in our emergency response practices as well. And I think that's really a critical piece that's missing in many places.
And we're just coming to the end of the show, and I just wonder, you know, what keeps you, you obviously talk very passionately, Amy, about this area, and I wonder what keeps it such a high priority for yourself, and also I wonder if you could maybe recall a particularly kind of good news story of where you see that your work and the work of others in the network has actually made a difference.
Well, I think what keeps it such an area of passion for us is seeing all of the places where we could do better. All of the places where, you know, we see situations and, you know, and we do work with schools that have had events. We do work with, you know, places where there's been lawsuits and litigation as a result of negligence. And, you know, the work that we do is on all sides of the coin, from prevention to cleaning up the mess afterwards. And when you see how even the smallest of changes and the smallest amount of training and just doing things just a tiny bit different, what a difference that makes. I think that's what really keeps us moving, is the idea that this is not insurmountable. This is not, oh, we have no idea what to do. We know exactly what to do. It's just, will we train people to do it? Will we have the commitment to do it on an everyday basis? And so because so much of this is preventable and there are so many things we can do, it makes it very easy to be passionate. Makes it a little bit easy to be frustrated because you can see what should be done. But we really are trying to move schools from this notion of, oh, it's probably not going to happen here. You're going to have a crisis event in your school. I don't care where you're located. I don't care how many kids you have. It's an average of every 2.3 years that a school has some sort of a significant crisis event. not an active shooter, but some sort of significant crisis event. And so that makes it really important for us. And when we go back and work with schools where we see, you know, we started out working with them and they did some changes and then they did something else and they added a bit of this, and you really see how just these small changes, they didn't cost millions of dollars. They just were different ways of thinking, different ways of making procedures and policies. That really is an important piece. What frustrates us is seeing when people just buy stuff. So we're just going to buy a metal detector, or we're going to buy a lock, or we're going to buy this app. You can buy all of that stuff. But as you know, in an EduTalk format, schools are about people. And if you want your schools to be safe, you have to train your people. So we need to stop buying stuff and start training people. And that's really what keeps us moving forward, is beating the drum for, great, you're going to buy this thing for that same amount that you spent for this one small thing. We could train every man, woman, and child in your building. And that should be happening first before we start buying this stuff.
Amy, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EduTalk. It's been fascinating hearing about a side to education. It was certainly, although we're all involved in working with young people, and we've got great and lengthy experience of things that can go wrong, you know, this has been a very different kind of show on EduTalk, and I'm really grateful for you joining us. And I think on behalf of all of EduTalk listeners, I'd like to wish you and your network all the best for the future. Just before we finish up though, Amy, could you tell us about how listeners could find out more information and maybe get in touch with you through the usual channels or through social media?
Yeah, we would love that. One of the great things about our organization is that we love to work directly with schools. So we have our website, www.eschoolsafety.org. We're on Facebook and Twitter. If you search the Educators School Safety Network, we have podcasts and other free resources that we put out. And we love to work directly and answer questions and provide information and do, you know, that sort of freelance consulting where we can work together and just have conversations with other educators, because that's really why we went into this. So I encourage your listeners to let us know how we can help, because we would love to have some conversations with them.